Okay, Ted's on.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Aloha, everyone. Good morning. Thank you for being here this morning for this meeting of the Hawaii Correctional System Oversight Commission. Commissioners, before we begin, I know we have some last minute emails shopping around, being sent around as we were notified, by the Office of Information Practices, State of Hawaii, that we had some issues with our agenda. And I'm gonna ask Lisa at this particular point in time to kind of give us an explanation of the complaint that was made. Lisa, thank you.
Yes, according to the email from OIP's staff attorney that we received back on last Tuesday, a member of the public complained that our meeting agenda for today, first of all, there was the deadline for submission of testimony was wrong, that we need to accept testimony up until basically the meeting. That can be easily corrected. I think I need to explain further that although testimony can be submitted up to the time of the meeting, it's the commissioners may not be able to get to it if it's submitted after the Monday before the meeting. The more serious allegation was that items 4 and 5 on the agenda, the descriptions are too vague. According to OIP, they run afoul of the Sunshine Law requirement that the description of the items be specific enough to give notice to the public of what is being discussed. So they've told us basically that items 4 and 5 cannot be discussed, acted upon, or considered by the board at this time. So I guess we can put those items 4 and 5 off till next week or perhaps the week after that. We'll have to resubmit, we'll have to rewrite the descriptions, make them more specific in order to comply with OIP's interpretation of the Sunshine Law, and we'll have to post the meeting agenda for those two items.
Commissioner, do you have any questions for Lisa?
Go ahead. Lisa, can you just refresh for us what are items 4 and 5 as they are stated?
Items 4, and I can understand how items 4 was basically just legislative 2022 updates. I can see how that may be a little too general for OIP's taste. On item 5, however, I thought was pretty specific, a discussion of the commission's annual report. And I'm not quite sure what the problem is with that. I mean, I can't imagine that it's not, I mean, boards aren't able to have general discussions. I'm not quite sure if the OIP wants the board to have some sort of specific action that it should list in the agenda description. I'm not sure OIP wasn't specific about what it thought was bad. It just said that the descriptions were too general and too vague to give notice of what was being discussed.
Mark?
I argue with OIP's interpretation, but that's OIP.
Lisa does a good job. I think it's our call. OIP's fine. They have their mana'o, but it's ultimately our call. Also, I just got a text that Dan Mystic's in the waiting room. So let's not keep him waiting. Anyway, I think it's our call, not anybody else's, but thank you.
Lisa.
Yes.
Lisa, if we decide to strictly adhere to OIP's guidance, can we receive testimonies from the public on items 4 and 5?
You can, but you cannot do anything about it. Basically, the OIP's ruling was that the board cannot discuss, consider, or act upon.
We cannot even discuss it? We can just...
No, that's... I mean, you can accept it, but the board can't do anything about it until the next properly, in OIP's eyes, properly noticed and described agenda.
Can we ask questions of those who present testimony?
You can, but the board can't do anything about it.
We can't discuss it among ourselves, so to speak.
Yeah. It's a public, everything is supposed to be in public, so.
That's what I heard.
No, it was more public than this.
This is
what I'm hearing right now. And I know, you know, it's, I don't know how I was struggling with this, because I know there's a lot of things on our community's mind when it comes to the testimony, especially in the middle of the legislature. We can answer the questions as we can ask, you know, but we will not have a discussion throughout the agenda on those items. Okay. So, commissioners, my suggestion at this particular point in time, you know, in terms of legislator 2022 updates, we can be more detailed on the bills that we have been supporting and put all the bills, which is about 20 to 30 of them, on the agenda so everybody can look at them. And so it's been what we've been discussing the last three meetings. Yeah. So we can do that. So that's one. And two is, you know, the annual report is just to get it done. Yeah, I don't know if there's anything specific, but we had some follow-up to getting it done. But I'll work out those specific items with Lisa. But I think that's how we move forward from here. Okay.
Mark, I looked at the Commission to Promote Uniform Legislation, their agenda, and they are staffed by the AG as a commission. I mean, they're very well staffed. And in their agenda, like the piece of legislation they're going to discuss, they don't put a bill number. They say legislation concerning, and they kind of describe it. So I think we'd be able to do the same thing. Legislation concerning increasing sentences or minimum or paroling authority or something like that, rather than getting down to specific bills. As for the report, I would suggest that we put something like review of proposed outline, review and discussion of a proposed outline and assignment for section, something like that. But look at that Commission on Promote Uniform Legislation. They do a very good job with their agenda.
Mark, I had a couple more.
Okay.
First, Lisa, somebody put in a chat room if we could post the OIP's letter on our website. I think it's a good idea. So could you do that?
Yes.
My second is, can we discuss legislation that we had previously discussed in our public meetings?
The problem is, again, that OIP has ruled that items 4 and 5 on the agenda today are basically cannot be discussed, considered, or acted upon. So
even if we had previous discussions, for example, we took a position on a bill in public, and the bill has been amended, we cannot discuss that.
No.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes, because the public has not received notice that such an idea would be discussed today. The idea of notice is that the member of the general public would know that this idea or this thing is being discussed and be able to, you know, come into the meeting if they wanted to discuss it. If it's not on the agenda, it doesn't exist, according to OIP, and they've struck items 4 and 5 from the agenda. So again, if we can get the agenda if the board wants to have a meeting next Thursday, or the Thursday after that, we can scramble, get the agenda posted maybe tomorrow, and that'll give us enough time to discuss it next week.
Lisa, we don't have to have a meeting on a Thursday. So, you know, if you give us a little more time on the agenda, maybe we can make it Friday instead of Thursday.
That's fine, whatever, but it would have to be next week sometime, you know, since I have to post the agenda, would have to be posted tomorrow.
We shared in our last last week's meeting that we would have a discussion today. Well, and we can't now, but we'll have that. There was a meeting scheduled for March, the first week of March. So we can do that. Okay. All right. Any further discussion, commissioners? Thank you, everyone, for being patient. I don't know how to put the email on the chat. Lisa, somehow we got to let the public know so they know what we're talking about in terms of that email. I think it's pretty
good.
Okay. So thank you for that. As we prepare to move forward, thank you, everyone, for your patience.
We can post it on our website. It doesn't have to be on the chat. I think if it's in the chat, it's hard to access after the meeting's over.
Yeah, I'll post it on definitely post it on the website. I'm just trying to get it onto the chat right now.
When can you do it?
I can post it on the website within the hour.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Lisa. With that being said, we'll begin the meeting with our first item up, which is public testimony on the agenda items. working a little. I'm just going to go raise your hands digitally or visually, and I'll just call upon you. Go ahead, Kat.
Aloha, everyone. I just received a call from Bob Merce, and he's at a doctor's appointment, so he will not be making the meeting. But he did want me to talk about a bill that he wrote that the commission had discussed, and it died, 2516, HB 2516, and that was the bill that called for a moratorium on a pause on the planning. And the second part was the establishment of a criminal justice reform committee that would work with to actually discuss what's going on with OCCC. And that bill was gutted by the House Corrections Committee. And now it just punts everything over to the Oversight Commission. So the Oversight Commission should be a full partner, but nobody really knows what that actually means, being a full partner, since this is something that's in motion already. So It's very confusing, and Bob was really disappointed, and I've been trying to help him figure out how we can rescue some of this.
Thank you, Kat. Anyone else? This may end up to be a quick meeting. Okay, seeing none other testimonies, we'll move on to item
number. Mark?
Yes, go ahead.
Mark, since our last meeting, I think in the last 2 weeks, we received several emails complaining about lack of visitation at the Saguaro Correctional Facility.
Yes.
And I believe we should accept those as testimony and enter it into the record.
I'll have to post into the website.
Okay.
Okay.
Mark?
Yes, Mike.
Yeah, Dan from Kona is on, and I know today he's eventually going to introduce the people from United. Is that right, Dan?
Yeah, I hope to. Yeah, that would be great.
Okay.
Oh, there's Michelle there right there.
Well, not speak of the devil, but there you are. So that'll be at the next meeting or today or whenever. When will work?
Give me what is this concerning?
Yeah, so happy to jump in. So I sent an introductory email to the commissioners to just let them know, to introduce them to some of the folks from United Healthcare, which is one of the MedQuest payers here on the island. They're in charge of managing care for MedQuest recipients, to talk about their new program that they're trying to get up and off the ground. so they could let the Oversight Commission know. I didn't get the chance to connect with them about this in-person introduction right now here at the commission, but I can see Michelle Fay, who is heading up their re-entry project from United Healthcare, is here right now. And I don't want to put her on the spot, but she's an attorney as well, Judge Towns. So she's used to responding to judges' demands very quickly. So,
carpe diem. Welcome.
Thank you, Dad. I appreciate it. I'll get back to you later on so we can discuss how we can put you on the agenda and have these further discussions. Okay?
Great.
Thank you, Dad. Great. Going back to item number two, on the update on the hiring of the oversight coordinator. Some of you have been emailing me. The recommendations was sent by the commission to the governor's office on December 13th. Yeah, so we're 2 months in as we wait, continue to wait for the a decision from the executive branch. Lisa, you have anything more to add to that?
No, unfortunately. We checked and haven't heard back from the governor's office.
And as we mentioned in the last meeting, whatever support the community can give in letter writing and whatnot, we'll continue to do what we can to get that decision as soon as possible. So thank you, everyone, on that project. As we move to number three, on the item, on the agenda. Max, you want to give us a heads up on what's happening in the system with our COVID infections?
Sure. All right. Good morning, everybody. This is as of yesterday. We had 198 active positive cases that we're tracking as far as inmates facilities on Oahu. The breakdowns include 11 at HCCC, 7 at KCCC, 19 at MCCC, 31 at OCCC, 2 at WCCC, and 128 at Halaba Correctional Facility. There were no reported positives for Kulani, Waiawa, and Saguaro. On the staff side, department-wide, we're tracking 17 active staff members. As of the 11th of this month, vaccinations, we had a total, this is a cumulative total. So 3,330 inmates received final doses. As of right now, we have, the 11th of February, we had 650 that received the first dose of either the Pfizer or Moderna, and we had 870 inmates that received the booster. So this is for facilities here in Hawaii. As far as Arizona, as of the 15th of February, we had 813 inmates that received two doses, and 155 inmates that received the boosters in Arizona. Staff-wise, our department, as far as being fully vaccinated, the two shots, we are at 87.9%, so just shy of 88%. Mm-hmm. This is department. That is all I have at this time. Thank you.
Max, I have a question. The latest CDC guidance is that for people who are immunocompromised, for either the Pfizer and the Moderna, the third shot is highly recommended, and a booster would follow, and that would be the fourth shot. And I'm pretty certain that you've got some immunocompromised inmates, especially in places like Halaba. Are you folks pursuing this guidance from CDC?
Pursuing the guidance from CDC, but I don't think we're at the fourth booster yet. We started vaccinations about a year ago. So I think they're just wrapping up on the first rounds of boosters. So I'm not sure, I don't know if you could explain to me how far from the third to the fourth shot that would be.
I'm speaking from memory, but if you're immunocompromised, you should get your third shot within 3 months after the second, and the fourth shot 5 or 6 months after that.
So I think we're about a year out right now from when we first initiated the first shot. So I would have to check with healthcare as far as if we boosted the fourth shot on anybody that's considered high risk.
Okay, thank you.
Max, I have a question. Understanding that the state, the governor's proclamation on state employees on being vaccinated or weekly testing in regards to being employed or working, that is on your staff at this time?
What was the question again, Mark?
You folks are following the state, the emergency proclamation about the staff being vaccinated, or if they're not vaccinated, to be tested on a weekly basis in order to work?
Yes, we're doing it.
Has that been applied to your program service providers or visits?
The program service providers outside volunteers and contractors would need to be either show proof of fully vaccinated, or they would need to submit to testing as required by the comptroller's memo.
So after we've just gone through this recent spike in the pandemic, are we having programs or visits at this time in the facilities?
We're not having face-to-face visits. There is some programming going on at different facilities.
Okay.
But when do you expect face-to-face visits to resume?
Okay. I can give you the in-state facilities. We were informed by CoreCivic that they plan to start face-to-face in-person visits the last Monday of this month, which is the 28th of February. As far as in-facility visits, Tommy can update that.
Yeah, as far as in-facility visits for in Hawaii, we're not looking at starting those until the first week of March at the earliest, depending on what the community and the facility infection rates are at that time. And we will be requiring visitors to show proof of vaccination and or the testing within the last few days to show they're negative. The initial visits we anticipate will not be without some type of barrier to make sure everyone is protected, but that's just a precaution on our part. So once we do that, we'll make an announcement to our PIO that visitations will be up, and we'll let the inmates know as well.
Commissioners, any further questions for public safety?
I just want to ask about the impact of COVID among staff and how the level of how COVID has impacted your staffing. And you had discussed Mark had asked about the impact on programs and whether some programs have started up again. And I know in past meetings, there was concern expressed among the public about the work furlough programs. For example, have work furlough programs started up, or is it still kind of like a victim of staffing levels caused by COVID?
The work furlough program is still shut down because of the level of community spread. That has nothing to do with our staffing levels. It has to do more with concern for inmates going out and bringing the virus back into the facilities. So what we've done in the interim is we went through and looked at each facility and tried to, as much as possible, increase the number of people on extended furlough when they're not reporting to the facility every day, and when they do the reporting outside the facility to receive testing and to make sure they're complying with the terms and conditions of extended furlough. So we do anticipate open up the work furlough program as the community spread goes down, but I have to caution, as with visitations, everything will be based on our pandemic response plan and what's recommended in the plan to make sure that we're not inadvertently bringing the virus back into the facility. That's why we had put more people out on extended furlough who qualify, because they're not bringing it back into the facility. So I hope that answers your question, Ted.
Not really. Have you considered things like requiring inmates to be fully vaccinated before they can enter the furlough program? Because it seems that it's been a long time. It has been a long time since inmates have been able to go out on furlough. And furlough is really a crucial part. The work furlough is a crucial part of your reentry process. And simply putting inmates out on extended furlough seems to be quite a big jump. And I think it would also limit the number of inmates who could reenter the community, because in order to get in order to get extended furlough, you're going to have to arrange for housing outside. You're going to have to arrange for a job outside. But places like the work furlough program is designed to help inmates make this transition with housing, with employment, with establishing enough of enough financial means, so when they finally go out, they be able to have a better chance of making it. Simply putting out, I think you're going to really limit the pool of inmates who can qualify for furlough by limiting it to extended furlough. So I would encourage you to do all you can to reopen your work furlough programs.
Ted, that's what we're doing, but in the interim, the alternative.
Well, it's been 2 years, Tommy.
I understand that, but you're not the one in the seat that has to answer to the public when it comes to bringing the spread in. We have to, based on the three outbreaks we had in the facilities, we have to err on the side of caution. We went into a major lawsuit. We just recently settled that. We have to err on the side of caution. And the way I perceive it is, this is we can't get as many people out as on regular work furlough, but it is an alternative that we've explored. And we're still looking at, when we open a work furlough program, one of the things you indicated was requiring vaccination. That's one of the exact same things we're looking at. But again, we have to do that cautiously, really must be cautiously.
Well, I guess we could argue this at length, because I my understanding is work furlough is completely separate from the rest of the inmate housing. And so you can use separate means to isolate inmates if necessary. I just feel that work furlough programs should be open as soon as you can.
We have an obligation to keep them safe. And even if people on extended furlough, if they're testing positive, we need to pull them back into the facility because we're responsible for their health care.
I totally understand that, but I think you have to balance this obligation with the long-term needs of the inmates. That's all I'm saying.
Can I speak?
Go ahead.
On the issue of vaccinations of inmates, although we have not made it mandatory for inmates on furlough, the parole board has made it mandatory as far as being paroled. So that is a goal that we're trying to work with the paroling authority on.
Okay.
I think you can tell how frustrated we are with those responses. I mean, 2 years of not having active work furlough adds to overcrowding, prevents people from getting, when you have a parole with chair to set, often chair to set is to allow people to get into furlough and get that job and stuff. And we're just backing up people. And right now there are so many jobs available that inmates could be going out and getting. It is very disappointing that caution has gone to such an extent that it's preventing people from moving forward in their lives. My little soap opera or soapbox speech, sorry.
So I, you know, I would like to ask the commission if it's your recommendation that we open up furlough regardless of what community spread is like, because we also have staff. If inmates go out on furlough, they come back to the facility, they interact with staff. And given the current conditions with, you know, most recent variant, it doesn't matter. I mean, if you're vaccinated, we got people that are fully vaccinated and boosted that have come down with the virus. And then it spreads. And, you know, although most of the symptoms are very mild, you know, if it gets into a population or somebody that's immunocompromised, it could be devastating for that person. So, you know, I would hope that you would appreciate that, you know, our citing of caution is in the best interest of our staff as well as the inmates. But if the commission recommends that we open it up, you know, provide us something in writing and we'll take a look at it.
One of our participants, Carrie Ann Shiroda, put in the comments that it would help if we had some data prior to the pandemic, how many people were participating in furlough statewide and how many furlough from the facilities or community-based programs and how many were extended furlough versus now. So we have some idea of the impact of closing the doors.
Well, we can provide that, but the numbers are going to be hugely different. As Ted indicated before earlier, the number of people that were on furlough are going to far outstrip the number of people on extended furlough, even with us increasing the numbers. So what you're going to see is the COVID effect on the numbers. And it's just as simple. It's not even going to be close.
That's what we want to see, Tommy.
We understand that. We just want to look at the impact.
Okay. We can give you the numbers, but just know that the impact, you're not going to be able to determine. All you can be able to see is the numbers. What you really need, which you can ask HPA to, is to see, okay, of those people who did not participate in work furlough, how many of those people were subsequently paroled because they're able to provide a viable parole plan? That's more, I think, what you may be trying to get at. But I can give you the numbers before the next meeting. I'll send it to Mark Patterson, and I can ask HPA to provide numbers. Can you give us a month or year you want us to go from? Because we'll go from that point forward.
Go from January of 2020.
We'll put it in writing, Martha.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That would provide clarity. Okay, you can do that. And I'll ask HPA once we get the request. We'll have it before the next meeting. We'll get it tomorrow.
Thank you.
Any more questions, commissioners? Thank you, Max and Tommy, for that discussion and for your report on the update on the COVID-19 situation in public safety. This is really just something that we continue to manage as a commission and as an administration, and how we can work together to resolve some of these issues and assist each other where decision-making often is stalled or unsure. Yeah, so hopefully we can provide each other with that kind of help for clarity and resolving of issues. As we move on, we're back to public comments on what you may have heard. As we, you know, it's a short agenda because we had to kick out two things that would have been longer discussions. So we're kind of at the end of the meeting. Any public comments on what was just discussed?
I have a comment, Chair. Carrie Ann Shiroza with ACLU.
Go ahead, Carrie Ann.
So I think it would be helpful for the commission to have data relating to work furlough, extended work furlough in comparison. So thank you to Tommy and Director Mr. Otani. I'm going to be providing that forthcoming. But I think anytime that we're talking about whether it's work furlough, parole, we should be looking at what the data is so that it can inform and drive decision-making. Rather than posturing speculation, we just need to take a look at the numbers. My sort of question coming from the community, because there are a number of reentry bills this year which is good. You know, there is a recognition that we need reentry support for people to be successful in the community. And there are appropriations that are being put either with judiciary, public safety. There's been suggestions for Department of Health, Human Services, and sort of spreading those resources into different community agencies for their areas of expertise. And so one of the things I'm concerned about, though, is that when I hear about work furlough, is the Department of Public Safety maximizing contracts or funding for reentry or even work furlough with community-based service providers, typically nonprofit organizations such as YWCA, Going Home Hawaii, even with MEO Best, there may be other providers as well. Is the department, in light of the fact that there are constraints and limitations with COVID spreading inside of our jails and prisons, are they maximizing the ability to contract community-based providers, which typically cost less than incarcerating people per day? In general, it's much cheaper. And typically, the recidivism rates are much lower. So it's a cost-benefit analysis. It's better for our community. Plus, nonprofits can leverage working if someone with the facility if they need to, but they can also work with other nonprofits to get additional services. And ultimately, we want people to successfully re-enter, transition into the community. So having that community support. So if we could maybe hear at this meeting or another meeting, are those contracts and funding being utilized with community-based organizations to the full capacity that these organizations can serve people in the community?
Carrie Ann, I'm going to, we're going to create a letter to public safety that's going to include that question, okay? So that we can speak about it once they provide us with an answer, yeah? Instead of just piecemealing different aspects of furlough.
Yes. Okay. And I think it's relevant because today, yeah. And you know, because of we're trying to go between this and legislative hearings, there is a hearing this morning on an appropriation bill for work furlough that's extended. And I guess the way that I'm concerned is that I've heard Commissioner Ted Sakai mention that for the PSD's budget for this coming fiscal year, that they were requesting a number of new staff for the women's prison. I think he said over 100 new staff. I'm sorry if I'm misquoting you, Ted. But that's second, thank you. And then also, so in terms of the work furlough, again, is that money going to go so that the facility PSD expands their own work furlough program? And as we know, it's shut down. Whereas if you increase capacity in the community, they have the ability to use other tools compliant with CDC so that people can be in the community, work furlough, saving money, transitioning, family reunification, all the things that we know that is necessary for success. So my concern from a budgetary approach is there this request currently, all this money for work furlough, but people are not on work furlough. So how is it being utilized? Can that be then diverted to community-based contracts for reentry services? And if not, then I think there is a larger issue here that we need to look at because ultimately we want people in the community. And if there is the ability to increase contracts, but that's not being utilized, the question is why not? Because ultimately our focus is community safety and for people to have enhanced opportunities to be successful returning back to our community.
Let me just respond, Mark, for a point Carrie Ann made. Generally, if money is appropriated for a position, it cannot be used for things like work furlough, which would be considered operating costs.
Thank you, Commissioner. But in the case for work furlough, there must be money that's set aside for work furlough within the facility. And if it's a limited number of people that are being served because of COVID right now, could that money then be utilized for the purpose of increasing or expanding contracts for work furlough-based community beds, for example, with Going Home on Hawaii Island or with YWCA?
That would be a budget type question for public safety. It depends on, there's more flexibility in operating costs and these contracts would be considered operating costs. But I don't know what their budget looks like right now. And I know that all departments took a significant hit in their budgets and they're trying to get it back this year. But if some of the operating costs are restored, it certainly is possible that they could increase restore the level of funding for community-based programs. But I'm just speaking generally because I don't know what their budget is like right now. Martha?
I know that nonprofits continuously struggle consistently to try to look for funding each year, Commissioner. And so that's something to be mindful of, right? These organizations provide a service to our community. So if that funding is essentially in a pot not being utilized, but it could help people in the community, then I would encourage the department and the commission to take a look at that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, there's so much unseen avenues that we best addressed in a written request, rather than, because we can jump all over in terms of state funding, federal funding, all of these kinds of things, but we need to really navigate and map the budget stream, Carrie, to really understand the answer to that question, yeah, that you're posing. So thank you for bringing that up. We want to add that to our request to public safety. Commissioners, as we end this meeting, Tony, you have something you want to say? Sorry. Or is that, I'm sorry. That's my hand on your name. send me your thoughts on the request, on the conversation that we had on COVID-19, and that we want to ask and furlough, that we want to ask public safety so I can put together a letter that we can send to them as one. Two, we will move ahead with putting out an agenda, Lisa, by the end of the day for a meeting next week. Do we want to do the 3rd or the 4th?
I would rather do it Friday and give us a little more time on the agenda. Yeah.
The 4th is what we are planning to, since the special legislative session we had last week was on a Friday. So let's do Friday at 9.
So you're talking about March 4th?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
At 9, we're going to have, Lisa's going to post the letter from the Office of Information or the email, so everyone can view that, as well as some of the complaints we received.
Hey, man, I'm confused about the date. I thought we were just going to delay for a week.
We can't. It's up to the commission if you want to just
reset. I'm sorry.
Items 4 and 5 for next week, Friday, and then just have another session on the 4th for, have a brand new agenda for the 4th.
That's my bad. The next week, Friday, is the 25th of February.
Okay. Yeah. So it'll just be the items 4 and 5 from this proposed agenda, I guess, with more specific descriptions, or we can add.
Yes. Okay. I mean, it was the legislative updates. Yeah. And both of them have to do with legislature.
And the annual report. That's very important. Report.
Yeah. So the 25th at 9.
Okay. I'll get that out. I was able to post the chat. It's a long email, so I had to break it up into two parts, but I was able to post the email from OIP into the chat.
And you're also going to post it on the website, right?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, with nothing further else to say, thank you everyone for being part of this morning's meeting, as short as it was. Continue to be vigilant in our observation and testimonies at the legislature, and we see you next week Friday. So thank you very much. Aloha. Mm-hmm.